The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is brought to you by the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, ensuring long-term growth is the world's greatest salmon fishery through investment in Bristol Bay science, infrastructure, marketing, and quality. The Bristol Bay RSDA, we're on board with you.
Bristol Bay, you've done it again. Yesterday you put away 2.4 million fish. How fast will the run slow down? We're watching. It's July 16th. This is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report. I'm Molly Dishner. Today we check in again with how things are going out where you're at.
Now that both districts are open, the Quijack and the Naknek, it's not much better. Seems like most of the fish have been drawn up the Quijack.
And we get a little comparison between Alaska and Iceland.
It's very interesting, actually, because in Iceland, we have the Atlantic salmon, which is very scarce in comparison to your wild species. So for us, it's a royal fish that is only allowed to be caught as sport fish. And it's extremely expensive to buy licenses to go into the rivers and catch them. So here you see it come in by the boatload.
Those stories, plus a visit to the Wood River Counting Tower, coming up. First, let's run through the numbers. The total run to Bristol Bay, just about 37 million fish. Friday's catch, 2.4 million, the best of the season so far. That puts the total catch this summer at 27.5 million. Another 410,000 fish counted as escapement, for a total of a little more than 9 million. Breaking down Friday's catch and escapement by district, Ugashik, 428,000 reds Friday, season total 4.6 million. 70,000 is escapement, season total 970,000. Igigik, Friday's catch 413,000, season total 6.6 million. The count was 36,000, total 1.5 million. Naknek Quijack, 1.1 million fish Friday, bringing the total to 8.8 million. The escapement for the Naknek River was 61,000, season total 1.2 million. For the Quijack, 173,000 fish passed the tower yesterday, 3.2 million total. Nooshigak, 327,000 fish caught Friday, bumping the summer's catch just about to 7 million. Nooshigak sonar counted 672 kings, season total 121,000, plus 11,000 reds, Wood River count 31,000 reds, total 1.1 million. Igushik, 22,000 reds, season total 238,000. Togiak, 20,000 on Friday, total 327,000. Togiak tower count, almost 5,000 reds, total 37,000. Now to the boat counts. As of Saturday morning, Ugashik, 289 permits on 223 boats. Igigik, 281 permits on 225 boats. Naknek Quijack, 789 permits on 630 boats. Nooshigak, 273 permits, 213 boats. Togiak, 43 permits, 43 boats. That's the Bristol Bay Run Summary. Back in a moment.
Support comes from Crowley. Fueling Alaska for more than 60 years, Crowley supports local fisheries onshore and off with a full range of commercial marine fuel products and Bristol Bay floater fueling services. More information at crowleyfuels.com.
You're hitting some big numbers, and it's July 16th. What is it really like on the grounds, and how long is this going to last? We called around. From the Tenderacola, Cale Garcia weighs in on the scene in the Naknek Quijack and the fish that are yet to come.
Oh, it's definitely more crowded, and it's kind of nature of the beast over here, right? Because if a lot of people floor their boats here towards the end of the season, they tend to transfer here and fish the last little bit up here, you know, sometimes. Let's put it this way, I haven't seen a lot of floaters coming back down yet. and we haven't seen any pinks yet. So it does sound like we're, you know, well past the peak on the backside, but I think there's still a lot of fish to be caught yet.
And in Ugashik, yesterday appeared to be the biggest day yet. But area management biologist Paul Solomons explains that the numbers might not be exactly what they seem.
There's a little bit of confusion there, though, because we had some holdover reports from the night before that kind of ended up, we had the tide split midnight, so we had reports that got reported yesterday that might have been part of the day before.
Now, he says, it's probably just about time for the run there to slow down.
So the numbers we've been waiting for from Port Mueller, the indexes for Port Mueller, seem to have been timed to come in yesterday and the day before, but 7 to 8 day travel time, and that it looks like they're here, or they were there. So if Port Mueller means anything, it should taper a little bit, but we don't really know what's behind the taper.
As for Igigik, the run there looks like it's already on its downswing.
It's like it's starting to step down nicely. It's still very similar to last year through this point. We may have a few fish yet to go on that one. Looking at it, so far through today, we have about, through yesterday actually, about 8.1 million out of a forecast of 7.4 in Igigik.
Whether you're tendering or fishing, we want to hear about your district. What are you seeing as the runs slow down, or are they? Call us at 842-5281 or email dave@kdlg.org, molly@kdlg.org, or fish@kdlg.org. Back in a moment. Every day, we read a daily dose of numbers, catches, and escapements for the Bay's five fishing districts. But where do those numbers come from? KDLG intern Spencer Tordoff visited the Wood River Tower near Lake Alecknagik and brought back this story on how the count gets put together.
Although it's old hat to most folks in Bristol Bay, coming from the interior, I was surprised to learn that the fleet, thousands of fishermen, millions of sockeye, and the whole basis of the local economy flounders or flourishes based on this.
All right. Come on. There we go. See, you can see some down there right now.
Oh, yeah.
That's the sound of your average store brand tally counter, one of the primary tools used for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's commercial harvest estimates, known here in the Bay as the Count. Isaac Reynolds is one of the three-person team operating the Wood River Tower this season. He's on the evening shift, but he volunteered to show me what he and his coworkers do once per hour, all day, every day. Counting sockeye salmon as they make their way up to Lake Alecknagik.
It's actually pretty visible. The only times that we ever have any trouble seeing them is if it's really nasty out and the wind's just driving the water into a frenzy. But other than that, and we also count the ones who go downstream too as a negative number.
Reynolds and his teammates Minette Schwer and Alex Perio each take an 8-hour shift to keep the count running 24 hours. Only sockeye are counted at Wood River, so you have to keep a sharp eye to pick them out among other fish in the water.
So that one right there with the silver belly, that's a pink salmon. We don't count those, but it's good to know that it's a pink salmon because then you don't count it as a red.
I can tell there's a difference, but it kind of took a second of me looking. You're just familiar enough with it that you can just pick them right out and not count them.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look down there, there's two or more right there that are also pink salmon. Generally, they're smaller. They have a different tail shape. They have a different distinctive color in the water.
The tower itself is bare scaffolding, with enough room to seat two on the top. There's one on each side of the river, and this one is about 30 feet tall, secured to the ground with ratcheted tie-down straps. The towers are simple, rugged, and could almost be mistaken for the ones used when the count started in 1956, were it not for a small solar assembly on the side that powers the night-counting spotlights. There's no ladder or stairs. To get up or down, you climb the outside of the tower, very carefully in my case.
When I first got on top of that tower, I was like, oh boy.
It's, you know, the sitting and standing doesn't bother me so much. It's really the climb that's a little more hair-raising for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's just power shaking you.
Yeah, it's...
You're high up.
The count is reported from here and seven other towers in Bristol Bay to Fish and Game, along with survey data, sizes and sexes of fish that are recorded a few times a day. From there, the department makes its decisions on which areas to open or close based on escapement, a target number of fish that make it up the river to spawn. Reynolds says he knows that it's painful for the fleet to be shut out of fisheries, but it's important to preserve the future of the resource.
I mean, it's not fun for everybody when we don't get enough fish going up the river and we have to close off districts. But the truth is if we didn't do that, the entire surrounding region would be at so much of a greater disadvantage. With the technology that we have for fishing nowadays, if we didn't do something like this, this entire area would be fished out within 4 years. Absolutely, it would be fished out within 4 years. And you'd still get a small run, but it wouldn't be enough to support an industry. It wouldn't be enough to support the ecosystem that you can find here today.
Counting towers are expensive to run, and state budget cuts have started to threaten their operation. As government faces lean times, private groups, from processors to native associations, have stepped in to keep them staffed and counting fish for the length of the run. These partnerships may become more and more necessary to keep the towers counting as they have for the past 60 years. For KDLG, I'm Spencer Tordoff.
That's the timer.
And this is the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report, back in a moment.
Bristol Bay Fisheries Report is made possible in part by Naknek Family Fisheries, 246-FISH, or on the web at naknekfish.com.
Earlier this week, KDLG's Dave Benninger brought us a story about improvements at Icicle's Wood River plant. Well, yesterday, I had a chance to sit down with one of the people who helps Icicle and other companies figure out how they can improve processing operations. Bargur Godmundsson works for Morell Fish in Iceland and was in Bristol Bay this week to look at the processes involved in processing and make them better. Hi, Berger. Thanks for joining me in the studio today.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thanks. So what brings you to Bristol Bay?
I come from Iceland and I'm working for a company called Marel, which is Icelandic technology company making machinery for the food industry, including the fishing industry. We have operations in the US, in Seattle, and a lot of customers up in Alaska processing fish. And I'm just here to take a look at some factories and see if I get some ideas about how to improve things and make it more efficient.
What's your background? Where did you grow up? How did you wind up interested in fishing?
I come from a small place in Iceland called Raufarhöfn, which is located at the Arctic Circle in the north of Iceland. So it was a town of about 400 people, so slightly smaller than Dillingham. Not as much isolated because Alaska is, of course, huge in comparison to Iceland. So I grew up in the fish industry. My father was a small boat fisherman using longline to catch cod and haddock and those local species we had. So I started when I was a kid basically fishing, and then I worked also in processing and got my education later on in fisheries science. And I've been working in this industry ever since, in the production and now for the last 4 years with processing technology company.
And you mentioned earlier you've made a couple trips to Alaska. Where all have you gone?
I have seen a little bit of the whitefish processing in Dutch Harbor, a little bit around the south coast. But this is my first time now to take a look at the wild salmon.
And what do you think of it? How does it compare?
It's very interesting, actually, because in Iceland we have the Atlantic salmon, which is very scarce in comparison to your wild species. It's a royal fish that is only allowed to be caught as sport fish, and it's extremely expensive to buy licenses to go into the rivers and catch them. So here you see it come in by the boatload, so it's very interesting.
Kind of a difference to imagine. What are the big fisheries today in Iceland?
Our big fishery in Iceland is cod. We do a lot of other whitefish species and a lot of pelagic fish like mackerel, herring, capelin, small fish like that. fisheries is the biggest foreign exchange earner in Iceland. Well, recently surpassed by tourism, but traditionally has been the backbone of our economy for since the beginning.
Do you still have a lot of small boat fishermen, or has it moved to more larger boats?
No, we actually have a lot of small boat fishing also, but they have evolved basically since in the last 30 years. They have become more technological, slightly bigger and safer, but these are very efficient boats, even if they are small. So no, we still have quite a lot.
Speaking of efficiency, what do you do that sort of helps mechanize the processing side?
My job is basically to analyze processes and come up with ideas that could, first of all, increase the yield of the production, because that is mostly where people get the highest benefit in the beginning. That is to make a more usable products out of the raw material that you have. The second, we always take a look at is, can we do it more efficiently in terms of labor?
So are you involved in sort of that move to have more processing that's mechanized with robots, or is that a little far afield?
Robotics is something we like to look at and see in movies and so on. But of course, there's a lot of tasks that we actually use robots for. But most of the things that we use in fish industry is a combination of computer technology and mechanized technology. So not exactly robotics, but something in that direction, though.
What ideas have you come up with in the past that have helped use more of the fish?
Let's say in the end of the day, someone is going to eat the product. And so that's a good starting point of thinking about how the product needs to be when the final consumer is using it. In the case of salmon, most consumers, they get a portion of a fillet at the plate and in a restaurant or at their home, or it could be smoked fish or whatever. So what we have done, for example, in salmon is making filleting machines, which are designed to increase and maximize the yield from the fish into the fillet, and also do part of the manual job automatically inside the machines. So traditionally, there has been a lot of trimming work done, and we have been moving these boring, repetitive jobs into the machinery itself. So it means that you can reduce the use of people in that process a lot, and get more fish through per minute. And then, of course, we have machinery also to make exact size of portions. So we use computerized vision to measure the fillets, and then we cut accordingly. So if you need a fixed size of 3.5 ounces, 3.5 ounces is what you get.
What do you think processing plants are going to look like in the future? Where do you think the fishery is going?
I think we are not going to see what we call the dark factory, where there's no one inside and no lights on. That is not going to happen in wild fishery, because you have so much variability in the fish that comes in. I think we will just slowly evolve to make each task necessary a little bit more efficient. So I think it's inevitable that we will see reduction in the number of people that is needed. And I think we will also slowly see a development where you have more production done in Alaska from the raw material to the final end product. As you know, a lot of the product is going out now as, let's say, semi-finished raw material, and is then reproduced in China or mainland USA in Europe. I would see some of this job being done in Alaska as well.
Thanks for coming in today, Birger. Good to always hear from another voice in the fishery.
Thank you.
Well, we're running out of time, so dipping into the mailbag quickly, a letter for the crew on board the Jack of Hearts. A listener writes, "Greetings to the Jack of Hearts and its crew, especially Andrew, from the Great Coast 603. Hope you're having a great salmon season. Hope your nets are bubbling and your hands are strong. We are looking forward to enjoying some of your catch. Thanks to the skipper for keeping your crew safe. Andrew, we are looking forward to seeing you on the 30th in Anchorage to enjoy a vacation of a lifetime. Love you and be safe. Go set a net." And another letter for Jesse on the Arctic Dawn tender in Ugashik. Manette emails to say, "Handsome, I can't wait to be back in your arms. I'm looking forward to finishing out the season in Kodiak with you, and I can't wait for whatever our next adventure may be. With all my love, from Monette Nalechnigik." And for Mark Bereda on the fishing vessel Full Scale, his Glass family is thinking of him and hoping he's having a great season. With much love from Slate and Jamie. If you have a message for the fleet, other tips, story ideas, song requests, drop us a line. Fish@kdlg.org, dave@kdlg.org, molly@kdlg.org, or call us at the station, 842-5281. We'll keep our other news extra short. Other fish news, salmon's not the only fishery right now. Dutch Harbor food and bait herring fishery is open today in the Unalaska and Akutan districts. In other sports news, she's been waiting 4 years for another shot at the Olympics. But in the meantime, Kenai running champ Allie Ostrander was named Boise State's Athlete of the Year as a freshman. And before we go, your marine weather forecast. For Bristol Bay, tonight, northwest wind 10 knots, becoming east after midnight, seas at 1 feet. Tomorrow, south wind 10 knots, becoming southwest in the afternoon, and seas at 2 feet. From Port Hyden to Cape Sarachef tonight, east wind 25 knots, seas at 4 feet, patchy fog. Tomorrow, south wind 20 knots, seas at 4 feet, and patchy fog. That's it for today. Just briefly a reminder, KDLG needs your support to keep programs like the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report on air and on our website. You can log on to kdlg.org to make a donation. Catch our replays at 6:30 and 10 tonight, and again at 2 a.m. Find our shows archived online. I'm Molly Dishner with help from the rest of our team. Keep in touch. We'll see you back here on the Bristol Bay Fisheries Report for tomorrow's early Sunday broadcast at 1:30.
The Bristol Bay Fisheries Report was made possible in part by the Bristol Bay Fisheries Association, advocating for fishermen. More information at bristolbayfishermen.org.